So we decided we would do the Dharma talk first, as we always know after lunch, it's a graveyard slot. Corpses seem to come alive. The body working hard at digesting the food. And also as well, because I'm leading the next tetrad, and you know, one knows when you've got a talk and it's coming, it's a challenge and very hard work to stay focused when you're thinking about what you're going to say. So, talk on feelings. The next tetrad, we are exploring feelings. Well, firstly, unabashedly, I will promote the book, the card, Detox Your Heart. I do encourage you, because it is a book that really talks about feelings, meditations on emotional trauma. And I'd say that the book actually was written 10, 11 years ago. And when I was working on revisions, I was like, oh my God. Did I know this? When did... Oh, is that true? I'd forgot that, because I'd actually written the book out of 6 Vipassana retreats. I'd sat 6 10-day Vipassana retreats and glimpsed. You know, the aperture opened. And in that moment of the aperture opening, just things flowed. So I do encourage you to read that. But we're here now in the present. And I just really want to first just remind us, we were this morning focusing on the body and using the breath, using the breath to let go of identity. And what do I mean by that? And what I mean by that is that so often we think we are our thoughts, and we're not our thoughts. And the only way we can really begin to loosen the identification of thoughts is working with the breath. But I want to tell a short story. There was an archer, and there was all these people surrounding this archer, and this archer is aiming at this bullseye. You know, and you know, like, if you get the bullseye, it's like, you know, that's the gem. And everybody is just waiting there, prized. And the archer is there aiming for the bullseye. And he pulls the bow and the arrow goes up into the air. And everybody goes, he missed the bullseye. Well, in the practice, there's nothing to aim for. The practice is about letting go of all ideas, including the breath. In fact, there's nothing, there's no such thing as the breath. What's the breath? If you were to point to the breath, what would you be pointing to? What we call breath really is the sensations passing in and out of the nostrils. So we're not even aiming for the breath. So this practice is about letting go of ideas. And as I said earlier today, that when Siddhartha gained enlightenment, he said, these conditionings that have described me as a man, as a human, as a deva, as a god, as an asura, these mental conditionings have been destroyed by me. So what that means is that he let go of all ideas and all notions of himself. And yesterday, when I spoke about Dr. Ambedkar, the man who brought Buddhism back to India in 1956, he too realized the same thing, that all caste was a state of mind. It was a notion of mind. And so therefore, you needed a religion to emancipate the mind. And he chose Buddhism because he could see through the Dharma it was about the reformation of the mind, the reformation of the human being. So this is what we're doing when we're on this path, is emancipating the mind, freeing the mind from dukkha, freeing the mind from unsatisfactoriness. Thich Nhat Hanh would have been my first Dharma teacher through his books many years ago. And I always remember reading, it's not the noise that makes you angry, we make the noise angry. And I was like, oh my God. Second art teaching, but it's so true. And he uses this example, it's like, so you're meditating and the phone rings and you get pissed off because the phone is ringing and it's disturbing your meditation. Well, you could have picked it up and, you know, picked it up or gone and turned it off. But we make the noise angry. And this is what we're looking at, actually, with feelings, because feelings are going to arise. So I wanted to tell you a personal story. I was in England last year. I live in Canada, so it's very easy to be away from family dynamics. I don't have to deal with them. But, you know, going back to England and I get caught up in those family dynamics, and just we are a very dysfunctional family. None of us grew up with our parents. A couple in Africa, and then there's a couple of us who grew up in England. And the fourth one has recently come into the family because she was adopted. And we were all going to meet together as siblings, but this fourth one, you know, had her drama, and so it didn't happen. And so, you know, the two older sisters, they're really pissed off, they're really upset, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. I didn't get hooked then. But this younger adopted sister, we got into this text communication and I got hooked. And I got really hooked. And I remember this surge of energy in my body. And I was going to text, get over it or get out of my life. But I didn't. I heard, you know, but that's the rage. And the next morning when I sat, and I sat for 90 minutes. And I remember when I first started sitting, because I was at headquarters of my Buddhist tradition. And I remember thinking, I'm not going to do metta. I was like, you know those days where it's like, I'm not going to do metta. But the wise voice said, you've got to turn towards it. Just turn towards what is happening. Because of course, as I said, when we're angry, I think I was saying it up there, when we're angry, who needs the loving kindness? Who? Yes, ourselves. So of course I wasn't going to be able to do metta for my sister, but what I could do was turn towards. And I spent 90 minutes of turning towards this discomfort, turning away, turning towards. And when I came out of that sit, I had some tears, and in those tears, I saw so clearly that actually, I didn't have aversion towards my sister. I had aversion to what I was feeling right here in this moment. I did not want to feel that rage. That rage was so strong that I wanted to push it away. And I pushed it away when I was sitting on those cushions with that negative narrative. Every time I went into the narrative, I was moving away from the discomfort. And I had seen that earlier on, that I think about a year ago, something painful really happened. And I lived by the beach, and I'd go to the beach, turn towards it. And every time I turned away from what was happening here, I was in some papancha, some proliferation of thought. And when I could turn and turn, there were times that nothing there, just sensation, okay? Just sensation, the emptiness, nothing there. So the practice really is turning towards what we are experiencing in the body. When we go into blame, when we go into aversion, you could ask yourself, what am I moving away from? Sometimes I'm sitting in meditation and I become aware of negative mental states. And I think, what's going on? Oh, my leg is feeling uncomfortable. I'm moving away from the strong discomfort in my leg and I've gone into some papancha. So these are things that you can try. Just, you know, when you've got into this negative mental state. But we're talking about feelings. I love the Dharma because in a way it keeps it quite simple. It's not easy, but actually it does keep it quite simple. In the Dharma, it clearly states that feeling tone, there are only three feelings. Pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Simple, no, simple. But yet we talk about, I say to somebody, and how are you feeling? Well, I'm feeling that they betrayed me. Oh, I'm feeling that they sabotaged me, or I'm feeling like they don't like me. They're not feelings. They're thoughts. Feeling is feeling tone in the body. And it could be pleasant, and it could be unpleasant, and it could be neutral. And of course, if it's pleasant, there could be the worldly pleasant, the unworldly pleasant, the unworldly neutral, the worldly neutral, the unworldly unpleasant, and the unworldly unpleasant. But three feelings. So in a way, when we're experiencing discomfort, is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Is it neutral? Neutral is that vagueness. That vagueness. And actually, whenever you focus on that vagueness, that neutral, it switches into either unpleasant or pleasant. Really, you know. And some of us, we don't like vagueness, so we create the unpleasantness or the pleasantness. You know. The mind is a trap. It really is a trap. And one of the ways we can really work with this. I love, there's a sutta called the Honey Ball Sutta, and I love it because honey is sticky, isn't it? Honey, and if you think of a ball, if it's rolling, what it can gather, the Honey Ball Sutta. And it really maps out what's happening. So we have six senses. The mind is also a sense. I think sometimes we forget that. And thoughts, I see thoughts are substance for the mind, okay? So we have these six senses. And basically, through one or more of the senses, we will have contact with an object or a substance. Could be a smell, so we smell something and it creates a feeling. So, for example, how many of you drive here? Okay. But all of us can be pedestrians as well. So the same thing. You could be driving a car, somebody cuts you up. You bib, bib, bib. And we've gone into rage. I'm a cyclist. I can be cycling and somebody cuts me up. And then I go into anger. But what has happened is one or more senses. So when I'm on my bike, the sound sense has had contact, the eye sense has had contact, and with contact, there's feeling. You can't avoid feeling. Whenever there is contact with one or more of the senses, you cannot avoid feeling. It's going to happen. That's reality. Feeling tone. We can't avoid it. And what I love about the Dharma is, it's very clear that actually physical pain, okay, we can have this physical pain, but, and that's the physical pain of the discomfort in the body, because when we're experiencing discomfort, it really is physical. You know, when people describe it, it's like this heat in the stomach or the teeth are grinding. It's really, it's quite physical.
But the thing that we can be free of is mental suffering. We can be free of this mental proliferation. But how we approach the feeling, because it's the way we approach the feeling that creates the mental suffering. So what happens is that one of the senses will have contact and feeling is going to arise. And based on feeling, a perception arises. And based on perception, thinking, papancha, proliferation of thought arises. And one of the ways in this sutta, it says that we can begin to work with feeling is firstly just noticing, is it appealing or unappealing? Just noticing. And I know this is dualistic because at the end of the day, it is non-dual, but this is the way we begin to work. And really what we're looking at, because we're moving, because in a way you have feeling tone and then you've got the perception, which then what we often call the feeling. So is that appealing or unappealing? Is it skillful or unskillful? And if it's a perception or even emotion which is going to take you into skillful states, pursue it. But if it isn't going to take you into skillful mental states and unskillful mental states, don't pursue it. Abandon it. And there are a lot of feelings at the moment. All over the world, people are feeling. But coming back here in America, there are lots of feelings about Trump. And I remember Tuareg and I talking about doing this weekend. And in fact, it may have been when she gave a talk at my centre in Vancouver and was talking about her experience of Bush and her rage with Bush and realising, actually, when did she feel that rage? That rage was so old. That rage was childhood. You know, that rage belonged in childhood. And I know for myself that when I get distressed about Trump, and I become aware of what's going on in my body, it re-stimulates a memory that happened a long time ago. So I'm not saying that what Trump is doing that we shouldn't say anything about it. But what I'm saying is we need to take responsibility for our feelings. Because if Trump wasn't there, we would still be getting angry. We would still be having these emotions. We have just latched it onto him. And that's what I often say. Sometimes I say, play the game. What is your mind going to latch onto next? There are some of us who are craving types. I'm a craving type. And I used to think, oh, who am I going to latch onto next? Who am I going to fancy next? And the mind would and I would see it latch onto something. And then if it didn't latch onto a human being, it would latch onto food or it would latch onto something else. And it's the same for the hate types, you know. What's it going to latch onto? And at the moment, for the hate types, it's all latched onto Donald Trump. But guarantee, if he goes, as hate types, it will latch on to something else. So again, with this practice of embodiment is touching in to our direct experience. And our direct experience is in the now. I have found it incredibly difficult to cry. When did I stop singing? If you don't cry, You'd stop singing to have those tears. My tears were taken away from me a very long time ago. And I have found it so incredibly difficult. And my friends, you know, a couple of my close friends would say, "Well, have you started crying yet?" I'd have to say. And I realise I have started to have the tears in the last year. And to have the tears, I had to be with the sadness. I was a maestro at moving away from uncomfortable feelings. I knew how to flee away from uncomfortable feelings. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't have the tears. It's so simple, really. If I want the tears, just be with the sadness. Stay with the sadness. And learning to stay with the sadness, I realise it's just so excruciatingly painful to be with the sadness. Excruciatingly painful to be with the sadness. It's far easier to go into blame or into distraction or into some negative narrative, some kind of proliferation. And when we begin to be with the sadness, it begins to dissolve. It begins to disappear. Habits begin to fall away. My teacher, the Venerable Sangharakshita, says two things. The first thing he says we're a collection of habits. And the second thing he says is that we are condensed lumps of energy. And with the habits, what the Dharma is doing is hopefully on this path we will become less of our habits. If you look at people in your life who don't have a spiritual path, because I'm not saying the Buddhist path is the only path to wake up on. But if you look at people who don't have a spiritual path, as they start aging, moving into their 50s and 60s and 70s, they become more of their habits. It's horrible, you see, you think, oh my God, they're becoming even worse with their habits. But with the Dharma, hopefully, you're becoming less of your habits because you're learning to let go of your identities. Feelings can create identities if we identify with them. This will create our identities. It will petrify us. It will fossilize us. When I think of the other expression that Sangharakshita says, that we are these condensed lumps of energy, I like that, because when I think of the anatta teaching, a way into it is just realizing that there is no fixed self, that things are always changing. We are not fixed, but we fix ourselves. I fix myself. I'm this black woman. And I can remember doing work thinking, what, I have to let go of this, because once upon a time at the centre of my life was my black identity, was my queer identity, was my gender identity. That's what I organised my life around. Polarisation. It was okay if you was black, female and queer. We could get on. Well, we thought we could get on. Of course, there are differences. But if we can begin to let go of those identities and begin to think about what we go to refuge to, because so often we go to refuge to our feelings, we go to refuge to our thoughts, we go to refuge to our identities. But if we learn to go to refuge to the Buddha, waking up to the truth, placing that at the center of our thoughts. The Dharma that points to the truth. The teachings that point to the truth. And we put the Arya Sangha, the noble ones who have woken up to the truth, at the centre of our thoughts. Identities will begin to dissolve. So I'll just end with just something that I wrote here. There's no escape from suffering. We're going to suffer. That is reality. And what we do is look into the suffering, see through the suffering. Freedom. We get freedom from our feelings if we begin to turn towards the suffering and disappear into the breath. We can't go over it and we can't go around it. We have to face our feelings. We have to. Thank you.